Alrighty, it's all you. Okay, well, we've got a small group here, but that's okay. This is How to Be a Great Math Teacher, based on the work of Joan Cotter. I'm Jennifer, and I never thought I would be a homeschool parent, one of those kind of put into it, because when my daughter was going to go to middle school, I was like, I can't send her to be with all those big kids. I thought I wanted to actually major in elementary education, but I went to a math class in high school. I mean, not in high school, in college. Went there the first day and didn't love the way the teacher was teaching us, dropped it. So actually went to school to become a dietitian, got married, had kids, then never practiced, decided we wanted to homeschool. So now I am a math teacher. So that is a little of my background. But I know math can sometimes seem like a scary subject to teach. And you might have a lot of questions. Like,
I don't really struggle with myself, but it's getting them excited.
Yes, well, that can be hard. Let me back up for just 1 second. If you want the slides, there's a QR code right there. You can scan that, and you can there. It will be at the end also.
Okay.
If you
want
to get it at the end, but for anybody who is listening, the slides can be found at rightstartmath.com/great-math-teacher/. Okay. All right. So, do you possibly struggle with math? You said you don't necessarily, but your kids are like, I don't know. Well, if you do, what curriculum do you choose to avoid the same fate for your child? Maybe you're good at math or unsure how to teach it. Well, then you also have questions. Should you use manipulatives or not? Do they just take up room in your house and you never use them? What manipulatives do you choose? And what do you do with them? Well, today, hopefully, we are going to go through what does it take to be the best math teacher for your child. Well, 40% of what a child learns depends on you. And don't let that frighten you. Don't think, oh my goodness, I'm not good at this. So they're going to be horrible also. Think of the things that you have already taught your child to acquire language. So how to speak, how to feed and dress themselves. They learn colors and shapes and sounds. And you have provided the opportunity for them to learn all those things. So whether you know it or not, you are a good teacher already, and you can totally do this. With teaching math, there is a science portion to teaching math. And we have new research on how children learn. And so that aspect would go into, you know, how to build a curriculum, so that you can teach math in the most effective way. There's also the art of teaching math. And this is where we all know that each child is different. And any of you out there that have multiple children can attest to the fact that they are different. And so to be able to, one kid might think, oh, that explanation is clear. And the other kid will say, well, that sounds like mud to me. So that would be where the art of teaching math comes in, because you can tweak your lessons to help each kid and help them to understand. You can slow down, you can explore rabbit trails, even not in math, in all different areas. So with teaching math, our mental development depends on an opportunity to learn. So we need to give them the chance to learn. And complex activities create significant brain development. So math can feel like a complex activity to your kids. At our house, we call these brain stretching moments, when they're like, I just can't do it. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, the light bulb turns on. They have stretched their brain and grown. Well, research finds that the same development doesn't happen with rote learning. So if I just tell my kids, 9 times 5 is 45. Here's a flashcard. Learn it. they're not going to have that same strength, brain strengthening that happens. And interestingly, intelligence is not fixed. Instead, it is increased by learning. So as we learn, we can become smarter. And this isn't because you know more, but because as you learn, you develop more connections in your brain. And as you know more, but the increased connections in a child's brain allows them to process new information and easily scaffold it onto what they already know, making it usable information and not just random facts that they are going to regurgitate to you that they don't really understand. So G.C. Lichtenberg, a professor of physics, has said, "What you have been obliged to discover by yourself leaves a path in your mind which you can use again when the need arises." So this means you might not remember something exactly, but because you figured it out before, you have that pathway, that ability to learn it again. Think of it as maybe that pathway through your front yard that you wish wasn't there because your kids take it over and over and over again. As they do that, they have made that pathway really clear. Same with when they are learning things and just kind of discovering for themselves. So, are you convinced now that maybe it's important to teach math and stretch your kids' brains and make nice strong pathways out there, maybe a little bit? But you're probably thinking, well, what really makes for a great math teacher? Really quickly, so you can see the roadmap of what we're going to talk about next. We're going to talk about these aspects of being a great math teacher. They watch their attitudes about math, nurture a strong number sense, allow time for thinking, foster self-confidence and independent thinking, provide games and puzzles, encourage hard work and a growth mindset, and they choose a good math curriculum. And if anybody's frantically taking notes, remember, there will be the QR code again at the end that you can get all the slides. But with these pointers in mind, we're going to spend a little time talking about each in depth. First, great math teachers watch their attitude about math. So, in thinking about that, never tell your kids that you are bad at math or that you don't like math, especially mothers to daughters. Now, you maybe are thinking, I've already done this, but just at this point you can say, I'm going to take a step from now on. I'm not going to say those things. I'm going to find a friend. I'm going to find my spouse. I'm going to talk with the other homeschool parents at the conference to be able to, you know, do my gripes. But it's interesting, especially mothers to daughters, if we're telling our daughters that we don't like math. Well, research shows that as soon as a mother shares her negative ideas with her daughter, that the daughter's achievements go down. So it's really important to, you know, put on that playful face, fake it till you make it, right? I love math. Eventually, you can really love math, and your kids can at least do math, even if they never proclaim love of math. But the same doesn't hold true with sons, and research doesn't tell us why, but it's just interesting. So great math teachers watch their attitude about math.
That's interesting, because I used to tutor math for the college, and it was interesting because I love it. So whenever I would tutor, and it was, like you said, usually girls way more than the boys, but I would tell them I love math, and I was just every time like math is so fun. Anyways, by the end of the semester, I'd say 95% of them would always say
that they love math,
enjoyed it, and they like it came back and like realized that it was enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
But the boys, their opinion would change slightly. So
my 9-year-old, she came in as I was practicing for the presentation, and she's like, "Mom, do you like math?" I'm like, "I must not have told you that I like math." And she's like, "Oh, okay, well then I like some of math." I'm like, "Well, I'll take that. I'll take that you like some of math. That's okay. We'll get you on board." But I think it's important to be able to tell your kids, you know, I like math. Even if you don't love math, to be at least say, I like math, so they can see it in a positive light. Okay, so continuing on, math education will depend on what the teacher believes, knows, and does. So your belief about math is important. So believe in the importance of math for daily living, future careers, and understanding of our world. We also need to know that having a math brain is a myth. My senior daughter recently did an experiment in her psychology class, and it was supposed to be about right and left brains. So somebody was supposed to say, I'm a right brain person, I'm a left brain person, and then she asked them questions. And then, in theory, if they were a right brain, every time you asked them a question, they were supposed to look to the left. But they looked all over the place, because right and left brain is not really a real thing. Just like having a math brain is not really, there's not some people can do math and some people can't do math. It's more that we need to help our kids develop those pathways. There is a specific area in the brain that lights up when you do math. And so we need to light up that area of the brain and help them develop the pathways to be able to understand the math that they're doing. Oops, wrong button. Also, in your attitude for math, we need to radiate joy for math and help your child develop a love for math. So like you said, that you've been telling them all semester, I love math. And it, you know, wore off on them because they could see your love of math and translate it into a love of math for themselves as well. So in my home, my 14-year-old, she's like, in terms of the math brain, she's like, I'm sure there has to be a math brain. Has to be a type A personality because you like things in order. And you, and I think that's one thing that's awesome about math is that if you, you know how to do the math, you're going to get the right answers. It's not a subjective the way English is. And so you can feel really good about doing your math and doing the processes and getting the answers. And it's not going to change from one teacher to another. 2 + 2 is always going to be 2 + 2. But within math, if you think, okay, well, I'm not good at addition and subtraction, that would be arithmetic, one little tiny part of math. Oftentimes we group math as just math, but really there's all these different branches of math. That's a lot of different branches of math. And so you might not be good at arithmetic, or maybe geometry isn't your forte, but there's so much that you can do in math and lots of ways. You know, maybe you're not great at arithmetic, but you can use a calculator. That doesn't mean that you can't do math. So remember to watch your attitude about math to help that help your kids. Next, great math teachers nurture a strong number sense. So, if you don't have an image in your mind, then a word has no meaning. So, think of a foreign language. If I were to ask you, ¿cómo te llamas? And you didn't know Spanish, you'd be like, okay, what does she just say? Whereas I was asking you, what's your name? So, same with math, that we need to be able to see a quantity in our mind in order to be able to attach a word to that quantity. So, what is 3? I mean, this is just the basic, very basic levels. What is 3? Without seeing it, how can we know what 3 really is? So, we're going to practice, do a little practice here. This is my abacus. Okay. So we're going to explore the concept of 3 with the abacus, and it's very useful in being able to see quantities. So here we're going to warm up our fingers here. Everybody show me 3. Yes, 3. Okay. So I want to have the child show me 3. And then we can put on our abacus 3 beads so they can understand the concept of 3. If they put them on one at a time, that's fine. But we can also just put them on all 3 together. And then this is how we write the number 3. It's the symbol. Many people don't realize that there is a difference between the symbol and the quantity. Okay? my son recently read a book called Captured Words, where there was a Navajo man who was wanting to be able to write down Navajo language, and they didn't have an alphabet at that point in time. And so he had to go through and figure out all the different sounds of the Navajo language and be able to pick a symbol to put with them. I mean, me, I'm like, A, it's always going to be A, but they didn't, that wasn't already there for them, so they got to pick out whatever they wanted to be that symbol. And it's the same with math. You know, the kids might know what, need to know the concept of three before they put the digit of three with it. So let's do a little practice with our quantities and our symbols. So can you show me five? Yes, five. Okay. So I am, because I'm mirroring you, I am demonstrating with my right hand. And if you were teaching your kiddos, you would do that too. But if your kids, because they're going to be looking at themselves, they want to be doing it with their left hand. Because what other things do we do that go from left to right? Reading. Yeah, we do reading. So we want to, as a teacher, you would mirror so that they would put up their left hand, so that when you get to more than five, you can, they can read from left to right. Okay, so here is five, the quantity five, and then there is how we write five. So pretty simple at this point in time. So let's try another one. Show me seven. Okay, so be your kid, be your kid, like you're the kids. Yes. So you're going to put five on your left hand and two on your right. Mm-hmm. So I would mirror and do it this way. And yours, so you would have five on your left hand and two on your right hand. Okay. And here we have seven. So we can see with the abacus really easily that we have the five beads, and two more makes seven. So that's really what we want, is for the kids to be able to see it. We want them to be able to see in, as they are developing their number sense. And here again is the digit seven, the symbol seven. So one more practice. Let's see 10. Yes, 10 with both hands. It's a favorite one at our house. And all the beads on one row there. And then here's how we write 10. So once we are comfortable, once our kids are comfortable with seeing the numbers 1 through 10, we can expand on that through addition and adding quantities. So here again, we're going to use our abacus, and let's add 5 and 2 with our abacus. Okay. Now, we write this with a plus and an equals, but just like with a foreign language, that might be foreign concept to your kids. So we want to use plus in addition to and. Recognize, oh, what is and? You know, if I have two dogs and three more dogs, that makes sense to them. Whereas plus might be a new word. So we would start out by interchangeably using and plus and equals and is. So if we're doing 5 and 2, I'm going to put 5 on my abacus, plus 2 more, so we can see those separately. And then I'm going to slide them together, and we get, what do we get? 7, yes. So we can see here that we have 7, because we've learned using our abacus what is 7. So then when we're doing the addition, we can see it, that it is 7. Okay, we're going to, again, we're going to do 4 plus 3. So we'll start by putting 4 on our abacus, then 3 more. Then I'll push them together. And do I see the same number there that we just saw a second ago? We see 7 again. So we aren't putting the beads on and then counting them one by one. Because we have learned and practiced our basic number sense, we can see that it is 7. And we're recognizing the quantities And this is actually called subitizing, which if you think about, like if you play a game with dice and you roll the dice, every time you see those dice, are you counting the little dots on there? You're not. You know what 5 looks like. You know what 3 looks like. So as the kids learn, they just know what it is. So if they don't have any kind of number sense, let's talk about adding by counting from a child's perspective. And because you are familiar with numbers, we're going to do it as letters. So A represents 1, B is 2, C is 3, D is 4, E is 5, and so forth. Okay? So instead of using numbers, we're going to use letters. So if I were to ask you, what is F plus E? I know you're like, well, let me help you out just a little bit here. Okay, so for F, I'm going to put some counters here. We have A, B, C, D, E, F. Okay, clear so far? There's F. Then for E, we have A, B, C, D, E. Okay, so there's F and there's E. But what happens when we put them together? Well, we as adults know the alphabet, so we would say, okay, F. Then I'm going to go G, H, I, J, K, right? But the kids most of the time will start all over again rather than counting from G, from F to G. They start over until they get their one-to-one correspondence right. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. So F plus E is K. So that wasn't too bad, right? We're learning new math here. Well, now I want you to memorize these facts. E plus I, G plus D, D plus C, C plus G, H plus F. Can you do it? Real quick. You only have a couple seconds here. Now, it's kind of overwhelming. Seems overwhelming. Or we can do it this way, okay? We can use our abacus to help us see those quantities so that when we add them, it makes sense. So again, we have 4 and 3, or 4 plus 3. We put 4 plus 3 more, and that equals 7. So let's extend this a little bit. If your kids know the basics, what about place value? You might say that adding from the child's perspective using the letters, it wasn't too bad. You could figure it out. But let's try place value from a child's perspective. So L is written as AB because it is AJ and BAs. Huh? Yeah, I know. Some blank faces out there. Well, let me help you out. L, just 12, is written AB because A was the first letter, B was the second, which is A because it's AJ, 110, and 2 ones. It's no wonder that our kids don't really get place value, because even though you might take 10 minutes to study this and it would just barely start to make sense, and you're like, I don't even want to do that. So then children often think of 14 as 14 ones, not a 10 and 4 ones. The pattern that is needed to make sense of tens and ones is kind of hidden in our English language. So how do we fix that? Well, we do something known as transparent place value, okay? So we're going to use our abacus again. It's a favorite tool here. And if I put this many beads onto my abacus, how many do I have? 10. Yeah, I have 10, okay? You didn't have to count or anything like that. You could see that there were 10 beads on the abacus right there. All right. Well, how many do I have now? 20. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to call this 2, 10. Okay. Notice how I have 2 and each row has 10. So I'm going to call that 2, 10. Okay. And we're just going to do that for a little bit. Now, what do I have here? Any guesses? So, 2, okay, so I'm going to call it 2, 10, 4, okay? Then, if I change it to this, I have 2, 10, 8, uh-huh. Again, I have 3, 10, okay? And I'm going to put some more beads on, And we have 3, 10, 6. Exactly. So you can see visually how the numbers, I fill up each 10, I get another 10, and then the partial rows are there also. So with transparent number naming, 10 is 10, 11 is 10, 1, 12 is 10, 2, 13, 10, 3, 10, 4, all the way up to 10, 9. Then we have 2, 10, 2, 10, 1, 2, 10, 2, 2, 10, 3, all the way up to 9, 10, 9. Okay? So it's only the numbers from 11 through 99 that are kind of messed up in our English language, that don't give us a clear picture of what those numbers really mean. And so we want these kids to learn what they really mean. So we would use transparent number naming for two reasons. The first is so we can see the pattern of numbers. If you think about numbers, we say 3 million, 3,000, 300. So why don't we say 310? Well, notice I don't have an S at the end because it goes along with the pattern, 300, 310. Because we want to be able to see these numbers in front of us. So we use transparent number names for patterns, so the kids can see the patterns. We also use it for place value. Okay, so we looked a little bit about place value with our abacus here. So if you've asked kids about the number 30, and you say, how many tens are in 30? They might look at you and say, I don't know. I don't hear any tens in 30. But if I call it 310, and then ask, how many tens are in 310? It's clear. It's right there, right in front of you. Your kids say, oh, I can see it on my abacus. I can see 310. The name is 310. So there must be 3 tens. Then our place value card shows us over there are 30. So let's try this one. We're going to say this the math way that we've just learned. We have 3, 10, 7. Okay. So here we have 3, 10, 7. Now if I'm using my place value cards, I can see that I have a 3, 10 and a 7. So in order to write it, I'm going to take those cards and line up the right-hand side on top, one on top of the other, so that I get my 3, 10, 7. Okay, if I get confused, I could lift the 7 back off and see that the 3 means 3, 10. And then put it back on top to see my 3, 10, 7. Okay, so here we have another one. What do we have here? 6, 10, yes. Okay, 6, 10, and here's our place value card. That's how we write it. All right, next we have 6, 10, 2. Uh-huh. And again, we'll take our two place value cards and put the 2 on top so we get our 6, 10, 2 when we're writing it. All right, here, this one's a favorite with my kids.
10, 10.
Yes, 10, 10. And here's our place value card to show us how we write it. And here we can see it, even in our place value card, we can see 10, 10 right there, or 100. And if I kind of pull out the syllables, 100 to help them with writing it down. Okay, so I'm using syllables to help me. So I have 3, 10, 300, and 3,000. Kind of have to play a little bit with 1,000, stretch it out to give us the right number of syllables, but it still works. So if I want to build a large number in the thousands, with my place value cards, I can see, I have 3,658 there, and my kid is like, what does that 6 mean again? I can peel my place value cards apart and see that the 6 is 600 right there. So just as reciting the alphabet doesn't teach reading, counting doesn't teach arithmetic. And in case you aren't convinced about naming numbers the math way, kids don't have to name their numbers the math way forever. When they are 10-6, they're not going to be coming to you for an allowance of $410. Okay? Really, we recommend that they name their numbers the math way in kindergarten, first grade, for, you know, pretty much the whole year. If they're starting in like second grade, third grade, for a couple months. If they've never done it before and they're older, even just for like a week, just so they can kind of get that concept in their head of the place value that is really behind the numbers. Just as we first teach the sound of the letters, we first teach the name and quantity with transparent number naming. So if I were to say, what is 36? It sounds like 3106, but its real name is 36. So Asian children actually learn math using the math way of number naming. And it's interesting because they tend to understand place value in first grade, whereas in the U.S., children understand only about half of U.S. children understand place value by the end of fourth grade, because they've just kind of skipped through those basics. Because if you were to ask these kids, well, how many tens are 36? They might say, 3, 6, 12, I don't know. But if you were to ask them, how many tens are in 3, 10, 6, it's there. It's really clear. And, you know, English, we all love English, right? There's so many weird things. So it's just all hidden in the English language. So using the math way to teach your kids in the beginning is really, really important. And transparent number naming is important also because math is a science of patterns. The patterned math way of number naming really helps children to learn their number sense. So once they have learned the math way, they can understand what the numbers mean, then we can teach them the traditional names. So like I said, they're not going to be going on forever saying, I'm teen 6 years old, or what, you know, however old you are. With transparent number naming, we don't have any random recital of the numbers from 10 to 100, and it gives order and clarity to numbers. And it makes place value a natural part of our number system. So great math teachers nurture a strong number sense. They also allow time for thinking. Now you might be thinking, I've got like 3, 5, lots of kids, toddlers. I don't have time for anybody to think. They just need to get it done. But to be a great math teacher, we need to give them time to think. Joe Bowler said, I have never committed math facts to memory, although I can quickly produce any math fact, as I have number sense and I have learned good ways to think about number combinations. My lack of memorization has never held me back at any time or place in my life, even though I am a mathematics professor. So we need the kids to know how to put things together. We need to give them time to think. A fact is considered to be known if it can be recalled in 2 or 3 seconds. Maybe you have a kid with learning challenges. It's okay to give them more time. They might need more time, and that's fine. But say you ask them, what's 6 times 4? And they don't know the answer to that question. But maybe they know what 6 times 2 is. They're like, oh, I know what 6 times 2 is 12. And 6 times 4 would be double that, right? So I can say 12. What's 12 doubled? That would be 24. So 6 times 4 is 24. They aren't necessarily going to be doing that forever, but to be able to have facts that they can scaffold off of each other, and then as they practice more, it will come more fluently. So with time for thinking, we give them time to visualize and then produce their facts. And visual strategies can really help them to learn their math facts. In the beginning, I know it seems kind of painful, like when they're starting to learn to read and you have to hear them sound out the word cat over and over again until they finally can visually see that. But I promise that fluency will come as they practice, as they learn visual strategies and they can see these numbers in their head. Well, strategy is a way to learn a new fact or recall a forgotten one. It's a visual representation, and it's a really powerful, a visual representation is a powerful strategy. So we're going to look at a couple of strategies. Because remember, we want to see these things in our mind. And my youngest is 9, and so sometimes we get lazy and we don't pull out the abacus. But because she has practiced with it enough, I can say, pull out your abacus in the sky, and she can see it in front of her. So here's our abacus. We're going to do a strategy. It's called Complete the 10. It's a nice addition strategy. In our house, we like to say that 9 likes to steal. So that is our just like nickname for it. But in order to do the Complete the 10 strategy, I'm going to put 9 on the first row of my abacus, 5 on the second row. Okay. Then if I look, I can see 9 is really close to 10, isn't it? So I want to complete that 10 by taking this bead and trading it with this bead. So I'll put my fingers on, and I'm going to trade them at the same time. Okay, so the quantity doesn't change at all because I'm making a trade. So I'll put my fingers on, and I'll say 1, 2, 3, trade. Okay, so what do I have now? Yes, say it the math way. 10, 4. Okay, I have 10, 4, which we also know is 14. Okay, so we can really see how the numbers go together, and it makes sense because the math way. There is 1, 10 and a 4. Okay, if I don't have number sense, then this strategy won't really help me. I need to know that 9 and 5 is the same as 10 and 4. Okay, so let's do another one. We're going to do 9 plus 7. So if I put 9 on the top row, 7 on the second row, again, I'm going to identify these are the beads I'm going to trade. Okay, so I'll say 1, 2, 3, trade. So 9 and 7 becomes 10, 6, or 16. And it's super easy because we've learned that adding 9 to a number is the same as adding 10 and 1 less. Clear as mud? Well, the idea of adding 9 being the same as adding 10 plus 1 less makes no sense if we can't see that concept in front of our faces. So we need to understand our transparent place value and be able to see. So another addition strategy I have is 2 5s strategy. My son didn't really love this one, but my daughter really did. And I've come to really love it over the years. So we'll put 8 on the top row, 6 on the second row. And before we do anything else, can anybody see the answer? Can you see that I have 2 5s, which makes 10 right there? And then my yellow beads, I have 4 of them there. So I have 10, 4. 10 plus 4, which makes 14. Pretty cool, right? We'll practice another one here. 7 plus 5. We'll put 7 on the top row, 5 on the second row. The way my son really liked to do it was to use our hands. And anytime we had numbers that were greater than 5, we can use this strategy. And so we would say we would throw the 2 5s onto the table. So we'd end up with the 10 on the table. And whatever was left, we would put on our fingers. So in the case of 7, I'm throwing the 5 down and coming up with just 2 more. And with 5, I throw the other 5 down. So I have a 10 on the table and 2 more. So I have 10, 2. Right there, 10, 2. But we can see it really clearly on the abacus. So it's just really pretty cool. 10 plus 2, which math way would be 10-2, and then eventually they learn that it's 12. Okay, so if I ran the world, I would say to teach addition, then multiplication, then subtraction, then division. But since I don't, I would really encourage that your kids have a really strong addition. Because most of the time when we're teaching subtraction, it's when they're like 7, 8, and they're in a stage in their development where they're gathering. And all of a sudden you're like, let's do subtraction. And they're like, no, I'm gathering. I want to put things together. I don't want to take apart. So before you move on to any kind of subtraction, really make sure they have a really solid foundation in their addition facts. So our first strategy for subtraction would be part from 10. So if I have teen 5, 15, I can put that on my abacus right there. Okay. And this is probably the way most people do it. First, they would subtract 5, so the 5 blue beads, and then subtract 4 from the yellow beads. So here I subtract 5, then subtract 4 more, because 5 and 4 makes 9, and we end up with 6. Not very exciting, but it works. Okay, and we can see it on our abacus. Another strategy would be the all from 10 strategy. And again, we have 15 on our abacus. And this time, I'm going to subtract the entire 9 from the 10 on the top row instead of splitting it up into two pieces. So if I subtract the entire 9 there, I end up with 1 on the top row, 5 on the next, which is still 6. Okay? And sometimes that's easier for the kids to take the entire 9 instead of saying, let me take part from this row and part from that row. But whichever way works for your kiddo, whichever way clicks, you don't have to force them into one or the other. That's the beauty of being able to personalize it to them. So we also have a subtraction strategy that uses addition. And it's called the going up strategy. And if any of you are familiar with counting back change, that would be this type of a strategy. And this is my favorite one. Does anybody remember doing regrouping in school with subtraction? Yeah, anytime you need a subtraction problem where you're doing regrouping, I find that the going up strategy, or I like to nickname it the adding up strategy, works better. Okay, so with this one, we are going to actually start at 9 and go up to 15. That's why it's the going up strategy. So I'll put 9 on my abacus, and I'm figuring out how much more do I need to get to 15. So that's why it's a lot like addition. What am I adding to 9 to get to 15? So first, I'm going to say, what do I need to get a nice round 10? I need one bead there, plus then I need 5 more to get to 15. So in total, I need 6 beads. Okay? So 15 minus 9 equals 6. And this strategy, like I said, is very similar to counting back change, and impressive for your kids if they have a lemonade stand or something and have to give change to their grandparents who come by for a cup. Let's say they're like, okay, it's 88 cents. I mean, most of us are going to be like, it's a dollar or 50 cents because that's easy, but they chose 88 cents for, okay, and the grandma gives them a dollar. How much change are they going to give back? They're going to give back 11 cents. Okay, did any of you think, okay, I have $1 minus 88 cents. Okay, what zero? Oh, I need to make a trade over here, so I have 10. Then okay, you didn't do that. You thought, okay, well, if it's, sorry, I meant to say 89 cents, that would be 11. 88 cents would be 12. I'm just trying to teach you new math here. I see the whispering. I'm like, oh, yeah, I said something wrong. Okay, 88 cents would be 12. But because you think about it, okay, if 88 cents, how much more do I need to get to 92? Okay, so I'm at 90 now. How much more do I need to get to a dollar? I need 10 more cents. So that would be 12 cents, right? And it's way easier than writing it down on the paper and doing all the trades. Like, going up strategy is a great one there. So we like to have visual strategies to help our kids learn their facts. And with time for thinking, we can use those visual strategies and give them a chance to think about it and be able to produce the facts. And the more they do, like I said, the pathways in their brain develop, become stronger, and they get quicker as you go along. And with time for thinking, it helps them to rely on their number sense. It's best to avoid flashcards and speed drills and time tests, as these create anxiety, especially with girls. If you ever, you know, took the ACT or the SAT and you knew you only had 30 minutes for those 30 math problems, and all of a sudden you're like, I just can't do it. And you didn't do very well because of the stress of that time right there. Okay? You don't need to be breaking into a cold sweat thinking about that. So a great math teacher allows time for thinking. They also foster self-confidence and independent thinking. So as a great math teacher, be encouraging. Probably preaching to the choir, because you're, you know, at a homeschool conference learning more, so you can be encouraging. Well, also realize that there's more than one way to do calculations. Some are more efficient than others. You know, there's not one right way to do math. Just think of those strategies that we just looked at. There's several strategies for addition, several for subtraction. My son often does his math in his head, and it drives me crazy. I want him to write down what he's done. But as long as he can explain verbally what it is that he's done, it doesn't mean that his way of doing it is wrong. And with that being said, not everything needs to be written down. But we do need to ask our kids to explain their logic. How did they get from point A to point B? And that is a huge, huge thing. If they can verbalize what they did, it really helps to cement it into their minds and helps to stretch their brains. We also need to help them identify where errors were made, if they made any, and help so that they can avoid making those errors in the future. So if you make a mistake once and you learn from it, no big deal. But if you continue to make them over and over again, then we need to take a closer look at why this is happening so that our kids can learn and become better. We also need to remember that mastery is achieved through thinking and not blindly following an example. That would be the way rote learning is. And it's not practicing some rule over and over again. Instead, mastery is a continuing process. So some frustration is a normal part of learning. I don't mean the laying down on the floor, kicking and screaming. You know, that's a little bit too much frustration there. But if your kids are getting to the point where they're like, oh, I'm just, give them a break. Tell them to go take a walk, jump on the trampoline, play with a stuffed animal for a few minutes. Your brain is still thinking and processing as you take a break. I have a lot of problems remembering people's names. And somebody will be like, remember that person? I'll be like, if I don't think about it, give me 10 minutes and it'll come to me. Same thing is happening with your kids. My older kids will be like, Mom, can you help me with this problem? And with the amount of time it comes for me to come over there, read the problem out loud to them, start to figure it out in my brain, then they're like, oh, I got it. Thanks, Mom. Awesome. I'm like, yes, I am just magical in that way. But it's because they're still thinking in the back of their minds, even though they're not actively processing. So we need to also develop concentration by being allowed to concentrate without interruptions. You know, your kids are there being like, and you say, oh, wait, smile, take a picture. We've interrupted their concentration. You know, we want them to have time to concentrate, because with concentration we can, you know, do something and we don't even realize the time has passed when we're concentrating. So those are some ways to help foster confidence. Great math teachers also provide games and puzzles. So we like to play games because games are to math as books are to reading. So games provide interesting repetition needed for automatic responses. And more importantly, games provide an application for new information. They give you a reason to want to do it. if I can play this game with dad and I beat him, I mean, isn't that really motivating for your kids? They want to beat dad. And when I play math games with my kids, I never win. They will tell you I never win. Until they're older, then sometimes I win. Because they just love it. So here, quickly, a couple of games. We have Go to the Dump, which is a Go Fish kind of a game. But we are trying to match, have them find ways to make 10. So like 1 and 9, 2 and 8. Again, we're going to pull out our favorite abacus because they can see that on there. They can see the matches if they don't already know them. Okay, and you just play it like Go Fish. I have a 1. I say, oh, Dad, do you have a 9? And he would either say yes or he would say Go to the Dump, and I would see if I get a match. Keep playing just like Go Fish. A game for multiplication would be Ring Around the Products. And the object is to collect the most cards. We start with, these are our products in the middle. And we ring it around with our basic number cards, numbers you would multiply together to make the blue ones in the middle. So let's say I'm trying to find 54. I could say, well, I know that 9 times 6 is 54. So I would collect those cards, put them over here so I can still see them as a multiplication problem. Then I'll take another turn. How can I make 12? Well, I have a 3, but I don't have a 4. Let's see, I have 6 to make by doing 6 and 2. And I would go through 42. Okay, I have a 7, but I don't have a 6. 50, how can I make 50? Well, I have 5, but no 10. 15, oh, I got 5 and 3. 9, I have a 3, but I don't have another 3. I have a 1, but I don't have a 9, so my turn would be over. Then we would fill the game board back up again, and then it would be your turn to help the kids practice their multiplication facts. And we have this game also on the iPad, which I love because you don't have to get out the cards. And even my 16-year-old still loves playing it. So great math teachers provide games and puzzles. They also encourage hard work and a growth mindset. We want to encourage our kids to persist, learn, and grow. So with that, we don't want to constantly give rewards, praise all the time. Some is fine, but if we're after every single problem or every single sentence, it kind of robs the kids of their internal joy. So kind of, you know, give them praise, give them rewards, but not don't overdo it. Because it causes the kids to rely on you for assurance. They're always going to be like, am I doing this right? Did I say that right? Did I do this right? So they need to learn to rely on their own thinking each step of the way. Michael Bobak said, all progress takes place outside the comfort zone. So if we allow for a little bit of frustration and give kids space to learn, then they will stretch their brains and really keep it down. All right, so finally, we want to choose a good math curriculum. What is in a good math curriculum? We want to look at the author's credentials. If they have a degree in underwater basket weaving, do we want them to teach our kids math? Maybe not. Maybe we do. I don't know. We also want to look at their philosophy of teaching math. Does it follow along? Is it based on understanding? Does it incorporate manipulatives? Does it include real-life application? So when your kids say, when am I ever going to use this? You can say, look at this problem that you just did. This is real life. Somebody's building a bridge here. Somebody's at the grocery store. Also, a good math curriculum, we want to look at the objectives. What is being taught? Is it more than just arithmetic? And are you actively involved in teaching? As parents, I would say the most important things to teach our kids hands-on, really, would be math, reading, and morals. Because if they know math, then it opens up the sciences. Reading opens up history. And morals just helps them become a good person. So I know it takes time to teach math, but if Jimmy is sitting in front of a screen doing an online math program, do you know if he's really understanding? Do you know if he's even listening? Does he have his something under the table? Has he gone to the bathroom and the video is still going? We don't know, but if we are there with our kids, we know, do we need to speed up, slow down, practice more, whatever. So I would really encourage hands-on teaching when your kids are little. All right. So finally, great math teachers choose a good curriculum. So in conclusion, each time a child discovers the beauty of math, a region of the brain lights up. And this is the same region of the brain that lights up when an artist finds beauty in art. So we, as great math teachers, can help our kids find the beauty in math. Bonnie, who was learning about the golden ratio, said that it's just one of the things in life that makes you feel satisfied to know. I mean, don't you want to hear that from your kids? Or you hear them playing the piano when you didn't ask them to? You're like, that's the rewarding stuff. You cannot love what you do not know. Ben, another math student, was learning to draw tangent arcs, and in the middle he wrote, "I love math." You know, it's those little things that your kids doodle on their paper that you're like, oh, yes, yes, yes. So I hope you have learned a little bit more about how you can be a great math teacher. And again, if you want the slides, you can do the QR code right there. For anybody who's listening, it is rightstartmath.com/great-math-teacher/. And I'm just out in the hall if you have any more questions.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Do you want me to push anything on this?
I'm